Welcome to a special AHA Innovators Connection podcast, recorded live at the 2023 AHA Rural Healthcare Leadership Conference. I'm Maggie McKay, and I'm joined by John Rigi, National Advisor for Cybersecurity and Risk at the AHA, and George Mills, Chief Growth Officer for GM SecTech, is an AHA preferred cybersecurity provider. George and John, thank you so much for joining us today to discuss cybersecurity best practices to protect hospital information assets. Let's just jump right in. George, what information assets are at risk when a hospital is threatened by a cyber attack?
Maybe a better question is, we say, what assets are not threatened by a cyber attack? Assets being all the images, all the patient records, all the electronic medical records, all of their payment and financial information, supply chain management, it's all at risk and it's all threatened by a cyber attack. Why? Because there's economic motive. If you can get it, try to extort the hospital institution for it. So that's probably a better way to look at it. Mm-hmm. What's not threatened? Everything.
And how does this impact the organization?
In all sorts of ways. Probably most critical is just evidenced about a week ago, I think, up in Tallahassee, and a hospital up there was hit by a cyber incident. The immediate impact was the shutdown of all emergency services.
Wow.
Postponement of all surgical procedures. Just think if you were planning on having your baby in that hospital and you went into labor.
That's what I was just thinking. You read my mind.
So the impact starts with patient health and services, and it can cascade into an enormous amount of cost and, we'll just say, damage to the hospital itself.
John?
So again, following along what George said, absolutely all information technology assets are vulnerabilities. So not just the data, which, by the way, hospitals have a lot of data. We have inadvertently become data aggregators on U.S. citizens. Think about it. We have their protected health information. We have payment information. We have their personally identifiable information. And we also, in many instances, have genetic data if they're part of a research or trial. And all these data sets are highly valuable, uniquely valuable to our foreign-based cyber adversaries that are, many are financially motivated. But even nations such as China have an interest in stealing medical research and innovation. So we have a lot of data. They're trying to steal that. And then ultimately, we have other foreign-based cyber bad guys, primarily based in Russia, that want to deny us access to information and technology by encrypting it through these high-impact ransomware attacks. And that's where we often see, as George mentioned, these cancellation of surgeries and diversion of ambulances, because the technology we need to care for patients becomes unavailable. And really in a very serious way, risking patient safety.
And what are some of the challenges a hospital might face when they're instituting a comprehensive cybersecurity program?
Well, let's start with the lowest common denominator. What we're really trying to protect to begin with, and that is the asset itself, the data itself. It could be an imaging file, an MRI scan. John mentioned the amount of data that is being accumulated and stored in hospitals. One MRI scan is 200 gigabytes. If you do a genetic sequencing run for somebody who's got cancer and you're trying to find out the best treatment for leukemia from the 80 different types, that's 3 to 4 terabytes of data. If you look at some of the big institutions like the Mayo Clinic and stuff, we're not talking gigabytes, terabytes, we're talking petabytes of data they're creating continually that's aggregating it by law under HIPAA security and privacy, which they need to maintain securely archived, backed up. You need to have a certain percentage of that ready to go to back up, to put back into service if you need it because you're hit with a cyber incident. This is probably their biggest challenge. The scope, the magnitude, the complexity, the cost, and the projection to know what they are needing to protect.
George, I'm still back at petabyte. Never even heard that word, petabyte.
Okay, a terabyte is 1,000 gigabytes. Petabyte is 1,000 terabytes.
Wow.
Now, he mentioned we're keeping everybody's data. Health and Human Services, I'm not sure who still co-manages it, has the medical records on every single U.S. citizen from almost every single medical facility.
Wow.
It's a massive amount of data.
Sounds like it. John?
And again, as we move towards this clinically integrated care, which depends quite a bit upon healthcare organizations sharing health information on patients that is increasing the collection and use of protected health information, that sharing. So with good reason, it improves patient outcomes, but does create that risk. Once that data is stored and moved, it becomes potentially vulnerable to cyber bad guys. Now, getting back to your earlier question, what are the challenges that a hospital may face when instituting that comprehensive cybersecurity program? There are many challenges, multifaceted challenges, from the very strategic to the financial, down to the tactical and technical. First and foremost, the organization must believe, the leadership must believe that cyber risk is truly a priority. They must understand the impact. It is incumbent upon the technical leaders to translate how this digital, this technical risk translates in risk to patient care and patient safety. And ultimately, the organizations must, in fact, resource their cybersecurity functions and really take that look in the mirror and say, understand, based on the threats we're facing, do we have the right team in place internally? Is it sufficiently resourced? Do we need to depend upon outside resources to really complement our team? And then ultimately, instilling this culture of cybersecurity within the organization. So you can see that the technical and tactical tools may not be the most important thing in cyber defense.
What would a successful program look like?
That's a good question, because here's an observation from the team I'm with here today. We have a lot of board-level people here. We have a lot of C-level people. These are a lot of region, world-type hospitals. That executive team has been in place. They're an older generation, okay? And you can see them walking around. We're one of the few cybersecurity-type companies here. I can tell you, we can just see by their eyes. We can just see by when they read what we do. They don't. That's a scary subject. They would rather grab a chocolate or a charger than they would to have the conversation. It's a scary subject. So what John's saying is great. For what John does with his organization, within the American Hospital Association, evangelizing, being a leader to the boards, to the directors of hospitals, saying, you have to look at the challenge and the risk in the eye. You can't ignore it. It's just, it's needed, because we can see it. It's a tough subject to deal with.
Right. And you just said how many hospitals have already had attacks just this year.
Yeah, potentially a couple hundred.
It's scary. We had a conversation with a gentleman earlier, and he heard us talking, and he looked and he goes, that's my worst nightmare.
Yeah.
CEO of a hospital. It's there. They know it, how to deal with it. So a successful program is the leaders that step up and acknowledge it and say, okay, what are we going to do?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the leadership, first and foremost, the leadership really, truly must understand that risk and understand how that risk impacts every function in the organization. And then fund the program. Make sure you have the right talent in place, that it is well-resourced financially and technically, and ultimately test the organization. So not only through these phishing email tests where you measure the percentage of employees clicking on those emails, but hire white hat hackers to attempt to penetrate the organization. Let's see how we can get in and how far we can go. And because I've seen, quite frankly, organizations that have beautiful policies and procedures and manuals, so on paper they look great. And then when you go to test their technical environment, it's pretty easy to get in, because the procedures aren't being followed. So it's a combination of leadership, strategy, culture, policies and procedures, and ultimately securing your technical environment.
And how does protecting information assets and ensuring the availability of data ultimately thwart a ransomware attack?
Several different ways. With John saying, you can almost take it, as I mentioned, to the lowest common denominator. How are we going to protect that asset through its entire life cycle? Okay, the minute we see it as a hospital, transact it, create it, it's a social security number, it's an image, it's PHI, it's electronic medical record. We need to figure out how to protect that through its entire life cycle, how to securely back it up and be able to recover it if we need to. Why would that protecting that asset that way and making it available be good? Under law, under HHS and the breach disclosure law, it's not PII anymore. It's encrypted data. It's essentially worthless currency to any bad actor who could, let's say, exfiltrate it from your hospital, your healthcare institution. You don't even have to report it to HHS. It's a legal safe harbor. What a wonderful thing. It's now going to be required on cyber insurance policies, big thing for hospitals, that you properly, securely back it up in certain ways. You can't just take it from one drive to another. So all of this protecting an asset through its whole life cycle thwarts the bad people. What's their motive? I'm going to either steal it and extort you to get a key so I don't, I mean, decrypt it, or I won't publish it on the dark web. But if it's encrypted, it's worthless currency. You also backed it up so you can recover it. Thank you. You hit me. Good job, but you got nothing out of it. Move on.
Again, ensuring that the data is in fact encrypted, but you have to know where the data is. I think that we see that failing quite a bit across hospitals and health systems in other organizations. The electronic health record is often highly secure. And as we see in the reported breaches to Health and Human Services Office of Civil Rights, often the data is stolen not from the electronic health record, but from email, from other service databases, from third parties that are storing and aggregating that data. So mapping your data, mapping your information assets, ensuring that highly mission critical, and what I say, life critical systems are highly network segmented, like those medical devices, that they are separate. Should the organization be penetrated by a ransomware attack, it'll help protect those devices. And ultimately, your fail safe to help you recover from a ransomware attack, highly network segmented, offline, encrypted backups. That is your safety net that will help you restore your systems more quickly should you be penetrated, and ultimately avoid paying the ransom. We all have an interest in helping organizations avoid paying the ransom. It funds these organizations to continue attack hospitals, and ultimately it poses a national security risk when ransoms are paid.
And George, I know you have an example of a hospital that successfully thwarted an attack. So tell us about that.
Actually, if I did, I probably couldn't disclose who that hospital is and how they thwarted the attack.
But in general?
We'll just say that the healthcare institutions we work with are hit with a lot of attacks continually, and they thwart them in different ways, okay? But one way is denying them from their motive. And their motive are the information assets. It's either to exfiltrate it so they can extort you that way, blackmail you, or to lock up your business. That's what they're after. Are they gonna try to sell Social Security numbers they can exfiltrate on the dark web when they can just give, you can pay them up front? John said nobody wants to pay. The issue with that is once you pay, 70% of the people who pay ransomware get hit again within a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? You probably haven't had time to shore up your defenses and understand how it happened.
Right.
And you paid. Why wouldn't you pay again? So, no, I don't have any real, I can't name examples.
Yeah.
Okay. But the ones I can just tell you said, look, if data assets are at risk, then we will protect them wherever they are with the proper safeguards and controls.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Some say maybe it's safe, and John said, this unstructured data world of emails, text, lab reports. This is the big monster. Look at what the CIO says from Mayo Clinic and others say, the amount of that unstructured data is growing exponentially more than the structured data that's going into databases, that's going into big, secure hospital information management systems. Imaging files and all of that, you have a repository on its own because it doesn't talk with another system. And this is exploding. And how to protect it all, John said, is a challenge.
Well, again, following on what George said, in general, I can say, and I'm happy to say, there are probably hundreds of attacks every day which are prevented by a hospital's technical defenses, but not enough to prevent high impact ransomware attacks on hospitals from being a regular occurrence. Maybe one every 2 weeks we hear about, if you look at the media reports, that a high impact ransomware attack has resulted in ambulance diversions and canceled surgeries. And I think the other way hospitals thwart at least the impact of the attack is being prepared to respond to the attack, understanding, being prepared in a way that they anticipate a successful attack. So being prepared to recover as quickly as possible without the least interruption to care delivery. Hospitals often do that by merging their incident response, cyber incident response plans with their emergency preparedness plans, having in place truly robust clinical downtime procedures, and ensuring that backup for all the data and network applications are offline, network segmented, tested regularly to ensure that they can restore quickly. Even in organizations that have all that in place, and we want to see more that have that all that in place, it will still take them 1 to 2 weeks to recover, even without paying the ransom, even with all that preparation in place.
Yikes. Any closing thoughts, George?
Yeah, just a phrase, because bad actors and ransomware attacks are leaving you with a decision to either encrypt your data and your assets or be encrypted. I think I know what the better choice is.
I love it. John, any closing thoughts?
So my closing thoughts, I know we've talked about a lot of scary things here, but as I always say, I said, look, the point here is not to scare. It is to make you aware so you can prepare. So there is hope. There is hope.
Well, that is encouraging after all your other scary stories. I'm kidding you. It is encouraging to know that you can be preventative to some point and at least try. George and John, thank you so much for joining us today at the 2023 AHA Rural Healthcare Leadership Conference. We learned a lot and we appreciate you being here. For our listeners, if you'd like to learn more about GM SecTech and listen to other podcasts, please visit ruralconference.aha.org/innovatorsconnection. And if you found this podcast helpful, please share it on your social channels. This has been an Innovators Connection podcast brought to you by the American Hospital Association. Thank you for listening.